Hello, it's Jan Hodgson back again, and this morning I'm in the exalted company of Tim Benjamin, who is part of the long history of musical traditions in Todmorden, and he's continuing this. We've had lots of people with different genres and styles over the years, and Tim's going to bring a world premiere to the town. He's written a work called Heracles, which is to be aired in Todmorden Town Hall on Sunday, April the 30th, 2017 at 7:30. So without any further ado, I'll ask Tim how people will have heard of him and then go on to talk about this work, Heracles. So over to you, Tim.
Hello. Well, I'm not sure that people will have necessarily heard of me. It's a bit presumptive of me to assume they have, but...
you'd be surprised.
But I've done quite a lot of things. But my first sort of notable thing that I did was to win a big BBC competition, part of the Young Musician of the Year, where they had a competition for composers called Young Composer of the Year. That's changed a bit now. But in those days, I was a sixth form student, and I was competing against sort of university age student composers, and that was a very big do, and broadcast and all that. Anyway, I won that, which is quite nice.
Well done.
And got to meet the Duchess of Kent. And
oh, goodness me.
I've done lots of things since then, and of which the sort of most notable bit, I suppose, is I've written 10 operas. Not all of which are huge, you know, two-hour things, although some of them are. Some of them are just little half-an-hour, one-act things.
Yes.
But yeah, I was going through recently, updating my website, and saw 10 of them, which I was quite surprised at myself, because time goes past. But I've also done, you know, lots of chamber music, and some of that's recorded, and you can find it in the sort of usual type of outlets. And
now, don't be shy about this. If you want to have a plug, please plug, because our listeners are very much into this sort of thing.
Well, you can look me up on Spotify. That's often something that people have, which is a great, good value way of finding all of the world's music at your fingertips, really. Spotify is very good. But, you know, it's on... you can find it through Amazon Music and lots of places.
Right.
But I just type my name in, and there's someone else that has the same name as me who writes some sort of hip-hop music, and that's not me.
Oh, right.
And you might get a shock if you hear that by mistake, expecting some string quartets. So music for the concert hall, and also, increasingly, over the last couple of years, quite a lot of music for film and TV, which you might find that you hear one day watching some of your favourite TV programme.
Right, I see.
You never know. But that's gone quite well, and I've scored a handful of films in the last year, which they get to be shown in festivals and that sort of thing. There's something that's going to be in the Cannes Festival this spring, which is a sort of a classical music-related film. It's called The Conductor, and it's about a famous conductor who became estranged from his daughter early on, and she goes back to try and find him. And everyone assumes she's just an aspiring musician who's trying to sleep with the big conductor, but it turns out, actually, you know, it's his daughter, and she's been keeping it secret, and it's that kind of
complicated,
sort of soppy drama, you know. Yeah, but but actually what they wanted was quite interesting. They wanted a lot of music sort of visible on the screen. So he was conducting a lot, and she was playing the piano a lot. And they talked about using Rachmaninoff, you know, to get that sort of passionate type of music. But... in the end, they commissioned music from me. So there's music that you could see being played, and there's music which was sort of background music that was usual, suggesting things in the story. But that was quite fun to do, that one. And they actually hired an orchestra of amateurs and got them all dressed up, and then they played some of the music, but they didn't record that. They just, you know, videoed them playing it, and then the actual recording was other people entirely.
But they'd have to sort of sync it together, did they?
Yeah. Well, in fact, they did the filming before I'd really finished writing the music, so I had to write the music to fit a little bit what the actions of the players were doing.
Yes, I see. Yeah.
And when someone's playing the piano, so that's quite obvious, because if they thump the piano and nothing comes out, you know, it's you have to make sure it all fits up together.
Thumping at the right time.
Yeah. So that, and then other people entirely might have heard some of my electronic music, which is not exactly avant-garde, but it's certainly not part of the classical type of audience world. But it's not in it by any stretch of the imagination pop music or dance music or any of that sort of thing. It's It's just my voyage of exploration in electronic sounds rather than acoustic sounds.
Right. So about Heracles then, if we can come to that. This is our main point of today's talk. How on earth did you come to write something like this? Where did you get your ideas from?
Well, my ideas come from all kinds of places, and usually, particularly with the operas, when I find an interesting character that I want to write about, and it's often focused on the person, and also, you know, if there's an interesting story that where something unusual has happened or something that gets me going for one reason or another. Well, there was the opera Emily, which was done. The world premiere was in Tottenham.
Yes, that was at the Hippodrome. Yes,
and that caused quite a stir nationally. In fact, unbelievably, there was a Times quiz crossword that they had in the weekend edition, and it was one of the questions was, what was the name of the suffragette that was the subject of an opera by Tim Benjamin
words fame. Yeah.
So that was he must have known me, the setter or something, but that was quite funny. But yeah, that was a very interesting story about a suffragette and the things that she did, and it was particularly her character and her sort of thumbing her nose to authority and all of that, which got me very interested. So with Heracles, you might think that was a completely different type of thing, and you'd probably be right. But the reason how it came about, I was playing in the orchestra, Todd Mudden Orchestra, with Todd Mudden Choral Society in Mendelssohn's St Paul, was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And afterwards, we were in the pub, as you do.
Yes.
I was talking to Emma Stafford,
right,
who sings alto in...
She does indeed, yes.
The choir. And she's also a senior lecturer in classics, I think.
Yes, is that at Leeds?
At Leeds University, yes. And her special scholarly area of interest is Greek cultural history, but specifically Hercules or Heracles. So we were talking about all of that, and I said, you know, I think someone should write an oratorio about Heracles, it'd be a great subject. And she said, yes, that would be a very good idea. And so, you know, that was just a bit of banter after the concert, but it stuck in my mind. And then I was talking to Anthony Brannick, the music director of the Choral Society, and he thought that would actually be quite good, because he conducted Emily and also Madame X, which was the following year, and that went on tour and did very well. So he's done he's conducted quite a lot of my music, and I think he likes it.
Yes, I think he does, yes, no doubt about that, yeah.
So he thought this would be a good idea to try and see if the Choral Society might be interested in actually commissioning an oratorio, which is a big undertaking for any organisation to do, because it's you know, commitment to perform it and organise so many performers, and it's not cheap to undertake, you know, getting all the soloists in, printing all of the, you know, hundreds
That's
of
right.
bits of paper and all of that. So, you know, great credit to them for agreeing to do it. And I think that's actually notable, you know, nationally, because commissions of that size don't come about very often. And that's not just a matter of paying the composer. It's a matter of actually being bold enough to say, right, one of our big concert for the year, we're going to do a brand new piece of music, take a gamble on it.
Yes.
And actually, you know, fork out to put it on, do it properly. And that doesn't really happen very often. And clearly the big sort of Palais might do something, like BBC obviously do plenty of things. But those are big organisations. And for it's not a tiny organisation, but it's a local kind of organisation. For them to do that is fantastic, I think.
Yeah. Well, as I said before, we have this musical tradition in the town, and we have, you know, international performers, we have dance band leaders and all sorts of different people. Mm-hmm. So I think it staggers people to know what sort of musical culture Todmorden does have. And as I've said, this is a continuation of that. And yeah, it's a different style. I am in the Choral Society and I'm coming to terms with it and finding it challenging but fascinating. And I'm looking forward to it. It's more of a performance, isn't it, than some of the oratorios where you just sort of stand still and sing.
Yes, there are a few surprises in there. So, the chorus actually sort of takes a part in the drama.
Mm.
I think, all oratorios have a dramatic story. I mean, The Messiah has almost the most dramatic story of all, you might say. But the two pieces which I think have had the biggest impact on me as oratorios over the years are Elgar's Dream of Gerontius and Stravinsky's Oedipus Rex.
Right.
Now, Oedipus Rex is quite an unconventional oratorio.
Yes, that's one I don't know, I must confess.
I know, it's fantastic, it really is. And it's structurally, I suppose, it's fairly similar to Heracles, because it has a narrator, a spoken narrator, as my Heracles does. And the text for that was written by Jean Cocteau. So it's quite good.
Ah, oh, yes, yes.
well worth hearing, even for that. And there are a number of famous actors have narrated Oedipus Rex. And it's pretty accessible music as well. I think it's... don't be frightened about it being Stravinsky.
You know? No.
So, and the other interesting thing about Oedipus Rex is that, well, people often say, well, an oratorio, doesn't that have to be a religious work? And Oedipus Rex, of course, isn't. And in fact, Stravinsky calls it an opera oratorio, although it's never staged. It's always done in a concert hall.
In a concert setting.
Well, no, I've said it's never staged. There'll probably be someone, someone will have done it, no doubt. Right. But, you know, normally it's solo singers and a large choir and a large orchestra. That's the, you know, the standard sort of oratorio format. Right. But I think Dream of Gerontius is also very operatic. There's a clear sort of story that the soul, the main character, goes on a journey, and he passes through, well, he dies, first of all, at the beginning, and then he's taken on his sort of spirit, his soul is taken on this spiritual journey. He goes through purgatory, he passes the gates of hell, and eventually he reaches heaven. And he sees God for a fleeting moment only, which is one of the most fantastic moments in the piece, and it's a gorgeous piece of music. But it's very similar in a way to Heracles, because I have this boy Heracles, so he's not the famous muscle man piece. He's a boy.
He's a boy,
And he's played by a treble, which will be quite exciting to hear a treble.
Well, and hopefully I have that. Yeah.
No, and hopefully I haven't got the orchestra drowning him out. I've been very careful about that, giving me enough support so he can be confident, but not so much that you can't hear him.
You can't hear him, yeah.
So he's taken on a journey, and as is the soul in Gerontius. And so the soul of Gerontius goes past the gates of hell, and you hear that the choir get to be this sort of demonic chorus, and that's one of the most fun bits to sing.
Yeah.
And I've done something fairly similar, as you all know.
Yes, that's right, yes. I can see the similarities, yes.
So we have that the chorus in Heracles actually plays a number of parts, and that's consistent with the Greek approach to drama. The chorus were a central character responsible for commenting on the story and telling the audience, you know, what's going on to think about it, as well as, you know, literally playing a number of parts. So, yeah, in addition to the chorus, we have the treble, Heracles, or Heracles. Well, we call him Heracles, because that's the Greek version. Yes, yeah. We also have Zeus, who's played by a bass, and Zeus is Heracles' father. Right, he has a mortal mother who's called Alcmene, who doesn't feature in this. And obviously Zeus, king of gods, is his father. And Zeus wants to send Heracles on a test to see what kind of king he's going to be in the future. And he's taken to the location of this test by Hermes. So we have Hermes, who's a tenor. And the chap we've got is a very flamboyant tenor, and the part is written to suit that.
To suit him.
I imagined Hermes as being, you know, dashing around.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
As being that kind of
mercurial, almost.
Exactly, yeah. So that should be good fun. So he's taken on this test, and he's taken to a high mountain where he visits the realms of two titans, who are royalty and tyranny.
Yeah.
Who show him two different types, two different ways of ruling, of being a king.
Yeah.
Now they're both. But they're both sort of ladies or queens. Well, they're not really queens as such. They're just sort of female titans, I suppose, who rule their domains.
Right, yeah.
And royalty is played by a soprano, and tyranny is played by a mezzo-soprano, of course. It would have to be.
Yeah.
These dreaded altos, right?
Yes. Find them something to do, yes.
No, but they're both very, very powerful voices that we've got, and the soprano in particular has to sing... quite dramatically and very high, and it's quite terrifying, I think. Yes, both of them are terrifying in their different ways, which is the conclusion that the Heracles really comes to, is that he doesn't like either of these options, and he presents a third way. He says, well, no, I don't think we should live in the hands of the gods anymore and be forced to choose one dictator's path or another. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, people, mankind should be able to determine its own future and nothing, no more fate, no more destiny. And they have this sort of I suppose it's a bit of a Götterdämmerung moment, the overthrow of the gods, and Zeus obviously doesn't like this very much, and it leads to a climactic ending where everyone is, well, the two titans are sent to Hades, Hermes is cast out, Zeus goes off in a huff, and Heracles is left...
He's left holding the baby.
Well, he is the baby, I suppose, literally, yeah. Isn't he? But he's left having to, you know, save, not save mankind as such, but at least allow mankind to choose its own path. So it's quite a powerful ending. By coincidence, it has a lot of resonance with the world today about, you know, what makes a good ruler. What path will they take?
And yes.
To what extent can we determine our own
future? Yeah, exactly, future? At the moment, yes.
So that's a coincidence, but I think it's actually a fairly timeless issue, really, about what the relationship is between the people and those who govern them or who rule over them. Mm. And in fact, in Heracles, on his journey, that as Hermes takes Heracles off to this high mountain, they fly over the remains of three civilizations.
Yes.
And we did that to try and show examples of past examples of where civilizations have collapsed, perhaps due to the way that they were ruled or the way they organized themselves. Uh-huh. So they're sort of object lessons for the young Heracles. So we have the Minoans and their flooded... as a tsunami came all the way back, perhaps. But we have the Mongols as well, and war destroying, you know.
Right on the steppes, yes.
Yeah, and then at last we have the Indus Valley civilization, which is a very interesting, well, probably one of the lesser sort of known forgotten civilizations, forgotten than most.
Yes.
But they are fascinating, and they're sort of in the foothills of the Himalayas and the Karakoram. So we have in this story, we've imagined that Heracles is literally sent up, you know, Mount Everest. You know,
yes, yes.
Sent to the highest of mountains,
right, yeah.
for his test. So the kind of journey from Thebes, a little village outside Thebes where he's picked up, and you can imagine him flying over the Mediterranean and perhaps across some of the steppe, and then finally across sort of northern India and Pakistan to arrive in the high mountains. So that's why we picked those three. And I think those are perhaps are the three most moving bits for the Quietus.
Yes, that's right. Yes, they are. Now, you said we. You keep saying we. Now,
we.
Yeah.
That's not a royal we.
And then you also mentioned Emma Stafford.
Emma, yeah.
Did you collaborate at all? Did you get together?
Yes, absolutely we did. We looked at... having had this idea to do something with Heracles, we tried to find what to do. And there are hundreds of stories associated with him. So the other part of the we is Anthony Peter, who I've collaborated. He's another local Todmorian.
Yes.
He's a great man of letters. and he has worked with me on two previous operas, so Madame X and one called Silent Jack that we took on tour as part of a double bill called Life Stories that we toured last year and we recorded, and that record is available as well. That can
all
be
good,
found.
Right.
It's very good, actually. Life Stories, it's called. It's got these two operas, Silent Jack and Rest in Peace, which is based on a story by Chekhov. And we were very happy with the recording that we did of that. But I digress. So... with Emma and Anthony, we tried to find a story from the Heracles canon that was interesting, and there are lots of interesting stories, but none which really grabbed me as interesting to do as a piece of music.
Musically,
and we came up with various ideas. One idea which we had was to look at the huge number of ways in which Heracles is present in the modern world. So for a man who may or may not have existed 3000 BC, 2000 BC, something like that, you know, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the number of products that are called Heracles. Everything from music stands to there's car parts, there's machine oils, there's all sorts of things that are called Heracles. Yeah. Anything that requires, you know, suggestion of strength.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's incredible. But and so for someone to, someone's name and sort of attributes to have lived for that amount of time is highly unusual. There was something we were trying to look at in that, but that didn't really click. And then Emma was just sending me piles of things to read. And one of the things she sent me was a... it's not really a story, it's a writing by someone called Dio Chrysostom, who wrote these discourses on kingship, and he wrote them for the Emperor Trajan to tell him ways in which he might choose to rule. And in this particular, and using Heracles as a sort of a parable, yeah, I suppose. Mm. And this particular idea of Hercules having to face a choice is something which goes way back. And he and Dio Chrysostom was repurposing this choice of Hercules, which is traditionally between virtue and vice, mm-hmm. where there's a difficult path to choose virtue. It's difficult to be virtuous, which is the sort of accepted thing, and easy to be full of vice and to go down the dark path. But interestingly, in this Dio Chrysostom version, he switches it around. He says it's easy to be virtuous and difficult to be to be tyrannical. So the best path is the path to royalty, and it's broad and it's easy. But the path to tyranny is treacherous, and you're likely to come unstuck. Which I suppose is a fairly obvious thing to try and say to an emperor. But that struck me as odd in the light of the existing sort of choice of Hercules stories, but also odd in terms of what we're always led to believe with our sort of Christian basis of morality, in that it's hard to be good, and that's the hard path, but it's the worthy path, and so it's worthwhile following. Right. So why would he say that's the easy path? And so I got to thinking that actually perhaps these two systems of government or ways of ruling that were being presented to really a dictator, a Roman emperor, are just two sides of the same coin, two sides of a sort of a totalitarian dictator. I suppose you can look in history, you can say, well, Hitler and Stalin, were they sort of two opposites, but actually it comes to the same type of
enormous similarities, really. It's the human condition, isn't it?
So I thought, well, it'd be interesting to have the choice being between two sort of opposite but equally unattractive options, and then what you might do to try and say, well, I have neither. I'm going to go our own. We're going to go our own way. We're going to have nothing more to do with this. So having a sort of central message to it of that nature, I thought that was very attractive. A straightforward thing to say, but actually wrapped up in an interesting story with kind of very colourful characters, Zeus, Hermes, Titans, and the chance to have a boy rather than a man as Hercules. That was quite interesting. Because you'd have anyone that has to stand up and try and be the man Hercules has quite a lot to live up to.
Yeah, a lot to live up to. Or flatten our faces. Right, well, that's amazing. I've often wondered, which case of chicken and egg situation, and whether you get the idea, for the lyrics first, and then you write the music, or do they sort of come together almost in your mind?
Well, we spend, writing with Ant, we labour, no pun intended, but we labour a lot over the words, and actually for me it's a large part of the composing process is actually working on the words, because the way they're structured and how long is each little section has huge consequences on the music. For example, I might like nice to have a chorus here and nice to have a solo here, but you want to spread the solos out a bit, you want to have contrast, and then it's quite nice to set up a situation where you're going to have a quartet of solo singers all at once, which is always Mozart liked to do that, like to have his big kind of solo ensemble pieces, the high points of his operas. And it's fun to do that, but you want to save it up. You don't want to have it all like that.
No.
And you want to save up the big dramatic choruses
and cheered. Yes.
Yeah. So a lot of that is dictated by the text, and so I get very involved in writing the text, and it can be frustrating when you're collaborating with. But you kind of go over it and you agonise a lot over it, but it's very important because that's actually part of the composing process. So when I come to actually sit down and write notes on a page, a lot of the decisions I've sort of made already about how it's going to work.
How it's going to work, yeah.
And for example, in this, there was a lot of debate about how one should pronounce Heracles.
Yes.
Is it? And we're trying to find out how the Greeks would have pronounced it. And there is a lot of debate about that. Is it Heracles? Mm. Or is it Heracles or Heracles? There are lots of ways you might do it. And in fact, looking at it more for a poetical structured way, is it two shorts and a long, or is it a long and two, you know, Heracles,
yes.
Anapest and all of these kind of things, that trochees and all these ways of looking at how the rhythm of words. So I thought, well, that's a musical thing. And so we have put, we came up with this kind of pattern of something like this sort of pattern, which then became a really important little musical motif in the piece itself.
It's repeating.
Yeah. Well, you'll be familiar with that from the section that kind of pattern, that rhythm kind of goes round and round and round, and it's quite an unsteady rhythm, but once you get into it, it's kind of it really seeps into you and sinks into you, and you find yourself with this rhythm going round in your head a lot, and I have written the thing. That comes directly from just this word, Heracles, repeated round and round and round. And there's quite a few bits and pieces like that. And so that came up, as an idea which came up in the process of writing the text, not writing the music, but it's a musical idea. So, yeah, writing the text is really fundamental to creating the music.
I see.
For me, anyway.
So that's the way that it works.
Yeah, well, for me, I mean, for other people have different ways. Yeah. And I think Angelo Drebber writes tunes, or steals tunes, and then gets on the right
freely adapted. Well, thank you, Tim. I have enjoyed that, really. I have. It's been a real eye-opener. And I do hope that some of our listeners will come along to the town hall there on the 30th of April. Because
it's going to be very full, I think.
I hope so, yes. If they don't come, they're going to miss a treat. So thank you very much. Now, you've given some ideas about how people can get hold of your music. Do you want to go over them again?
So you can, you can look on my website, timbenjamin.com, and if you go to Spotify or iTunes or Amazon Music, there's the various recordings available there. You can stream them and listen to them.
Right.
You don't have to buy them or anything, I think. I think it's quite hard to actually buy music these days.
It's not easy. No, you're right, yeah. Well, our listeners will also know that if they go on to tntodd.org.uk, they'll find the newsletter website, and apparently it is also on Facebook and Twitter, but that's beyond my ken, I'm afraid. So thank you again.
Thank you.
And I do hope it goes well, because it should.
Thank you. I think it will, yes.
Thank you.